Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Knox Robinson.
Just to be a living symbol of the potential and the vitality of what it could mean to be human and have it not reliant on a fancy car, fancy clothes, your job or your income. Just the fact that you pumping down the street by yourself in shorts and a t-shirt could like make somebody else think and consider their own lives and their own choices and their own potential for freedom and liberation. That's kind of what it's coming down to for me at this point.
On this episode of The Rundown, we spoke with one of Canada's fastest marathoners, Dylan Wykes. Running was a sport he enjoyed from a young age, but his competitive nature is what allowed him to excel, earning him a scholarship at a D1 school and eventually making his way onto the 2012 Olympic team. From head coach to elite coordinator for Ottawa Race Weekend, Dylan remains present in running. It's clear that he's passionate, but he may be more connected to the community now than ever before. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, on August 24th, it was announced that 9-time Olympic gold medalist Usain Bolt tested positive for the COVID-19 virus. When the news came out on social media, he decided to take matters into his own hands and updated his followers himself. He mentioned that although he wasn't showing any symptoms, he'd be self-quarantining at home to err on the side of caution. He also suggested that anyone who had been in contact with him do the same. This is just a reminder that anyone can get the virus, so please wear your mask and keep your distance. This pandemic is far from over, so we have to do everything we can to protect ourselves and others. Many runners have been trying to stay fit during these challenging times. Canadian marathoner Cam Levins recently tested himself on a half marathon distance and ran a 2-second PB with an unofficial time of 1 hour, 2 minutes, and 12 seconds. Not bad for a solo effort with no competition. And he's not the only one. A few weeks ago, American marathoner Sarah Hall did the same, running her half in 1 hour, 8 minutes, and 17 seconds. Make sure to check the show notes for links to news and information about these stories, as well as ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. On this podcast, we've had some of the top female runners in Canada. Today, we're lucky enough to have one of the fastest marathoners in Canada, in the history of Canada, I should say. He's been to the Olympics. He's one of the coaches for and founders of Mile to Marathon, and also is part of the Ottawa Race Weekend as elite athlete coordinator, which is quite fitting. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show Dylan Wykes.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin. I'm wearing a few hats these days, I guess, eh?
Yeah, right, and including a family man, which I left out there. You got two kids and a family too, so I'm sure that takes up plenty of time as well.
Indeed.
How are you doing with everything going on? You know, COVID has been going on for months now, and how has that kind of affected your own personal life, running, training, and also the coaching aspect?
It's definitely been a challenge in kind of all aspects of life. You know, with the family, it's like we were used to our oldest daughter being in school and our youngest being in daycare. So that allowed me to do my running and run Mile to Marathon and also do my work with Ottawa Race Weekend. So once they were home, it was like there's a lot of juggling. Me and my wife, she's a professor at Carleton University. So she's got her hands full with her career as well. So it's just like it was a lot of juggling, and my running definitely took a back seat. Certainly in the early going of the pandemic, it was kind of one thing that, with races being canceled and stuff like that, I was kind of like any other runner, just kind of trying to figure out what my motivation was, why I was still doing it. And I ended up taking some time off to make sure that family was, the kids were taken care of, and we were, and things were still going along smoothly with Mile to Marathon. I think with the coaching, it took, like a lot of businesses, we had to pivot a little. So once all the races were off the table, we kind of looked at, different ways to keep our athletes motivated and, stuff like that. So it was busy. It's been a lot, and I certainly haven't been as productive as I would have been in non-pandemic times, but, everyone's healthy, we're just kind of carrying on.
Do you find that because maybe you're struggling with your own, like objectives with running, that it became difficult to help other, cause you're coaching many athletes. So to help them with, as they struggle through these times, and maybe that actually helped you in your own goal setting?
I think it really worked both ways. It was, I felt like I, could relate to a lot of my athletes, maybe a lot better than I had in the past, in terms of like, there's all these other obstacles, and what do we do when races are canceled? So I think it really helped me, to kind of be able to put myself in other people's, in some of my athletes' shoes and help them through that. But in turn, it was all so remarkable to, see a lot of my athletes just like put their head down and be able to recalibrate and set different goals and still be excited about their training and their running. And it's like, well, if all these people can do it, certainly I, I can take the time and energy to kind of sit down and think about what I want to do with my running and get motivated to make, some choices that are positive.
So what did you decide to do in the end, and what were you looking forward to this year?
Yeah, I mean, initially, I was planning to run Boston in the spring, and a lot of people are surprised to when I tell them I've never finished the Boston Marathon. I started one year, but I picked up an injury, so never finished. So Boston was on the cards, and then in the end, after about a month of kind of not really being motivated to do any real training, I just made it my goal to just get out the door every morning and just with no expectations or anything like that. And that was, it was really refreshing, because I put away the GPS watch too, and I just ran for the sake of running. I said, I'm going to run this loop today and go for it. So that was, it was refreshing, and it just kind of allowed me to get back to some of the basics of just why I enjoyed running and the feeling that, I got, from just getting out there. It was really positive, and I think it was also a good, for my mental health as much as my physical health to have that. And so it was, it's been good. And honestly, I haven't really changed course much since May. I've just been getting out the door every day. Once in a while, if I feel good, I'll do a workout. But usually I'm just logging some easy miles and enjoying it.
Have you set any, like, I know a lot of people are getting into like these virtual races, and I know you were part of, what Ottawa did for the 10K championships, in trying to make that a possibility this year for runners to have goals. Like, have you set any like virtual races for yourself, and how did that end up turning out? I heard a little podcast interview that you did kind of leading up to it, and how you're trying to make that race on July 1st, exciting for runners everywhere. And was it everything you expected? And what were some like takeaways from that?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of my own running, I haven't grabbed onto to any of the virtual stuff. I'm going to do the virtual Boston Marathon, but just to complete it. I'm not going to be trying to run fast. So that'll be fun, but I haven't wrapped my head around a virtual race as kind of a goal to direct my own training. I don't know if it's just where I'm at in my elite running career that I'm not motivated to do it, that I feel like I've probably run as fast as I'm going to run. So I'm not motivated in that regard. I'm not really sure, but regardless, it's been fun to be able to set up some virtual races for other people and the, you know, the Canadian virtual 10K champs that you referred to that we did on July 1st was really good. You know, the feedback we got from the elites that did it was for the most part positive. We didn't hear from many people that didn't do it. So I don't know what the reasons were that they didn't participate or didn't think it was a good idea, but yeah, I think it was, it was a good balance of fun and competitive, because we couldn't, given the circumstances and given the kind of the feasibility of things, we couldn't do a true, just pure competitive national championship with, you know, a huge prize purse. And, you know, when you're running a national championship in person, you've got drug testing as well and all that stuff. We couldn't incorporate all of this into a virtual event, but I think the people, the athletes that did it, they recognized what we were trying to do with it, and they used it as a good opportunity to see where they're at and to have a competitive setting, even though they're out there on their own or in small groups doing the race itself. Those athletes that did it had a lot of fun, and some of them ran really fast. So it was great.
Yeah. I saw like 28 minutes and Natasha Wodak repeated, and which is always great to see. And she's great at sharing that kind of stuff. So you guys also put things in place in order to make sure that people stayed honest as well, right?
Did our best. That was one of the initial things, was like, okay, how much can we trust that people are going to do this and do it honestly? And it wasn't a matter of like people cheating, but just a lot of it was the inaccuracies of people's GPS watches and stuff was a concern for us. So we made sure that they had someone on a bike who was also recording GPS at the time, and we had them record some video, and just in case someone thought it would be a good idea to jump on a bike instead of actually physically run or jump in a car or something silly like that. But I mean, the people are competitive, and some people might look for a way to get a small advantage on the virtual competition. But I think everyone kind of saw the point of the, some of the precautions or some of the extra protocols we had in place to make sure that, okay, they're actually doing their best to run a route that's 10K and make sure it's, on a loop or an out and back course. So you're not just like starting at the top of a mountain and plummeting down for 10K. And so for the most part, people understood what we were trying to do there. And it definitely, there wasn't any uproar that they were silly guidelines or protocols.
Especially when there's a prize money involved, you kind of have to have a couple of the things in place for sure.
Yeah.
I know I've done a few of these like virtual races and use them as tests, but like you said, for the most part, like yourself, just kind of getting out for a run has been refreshing for me, and just using it as a way to get out of the house and trying to stay as consistent as possible. You mentioned like taking off the watch. I find that like really interesting, because I use it, my watch, as a way to track, workouts or track mileage for a week, but like not focus so much on the pace per se, but taking it off totally, like, it's such a foreign thing for runners these days. You find that, like, that was a, like, aha moment for you, like, taking it off? Like, did it change you in any way? Like, or do you see, like, benefits to that?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways it just freed me from kind of the any sort of, like, expectations that I would put on myself normally, even for an easy run. You know, I go at the door for an easy run and I say, okay, ballpark, I'm going to run 4-minute Ks. And if I, you know, I look down at my watch and see I'm running 4:30s, I might, like, overinterpret that and just kind of take away, add some stress and anxiety to the run that doesn't need to be there. It was positive for me in that regard. But definitely in this day and age, there, like, I could see for a lot of people, it could cause more anxiety to take mm-hmm. off their watch completely. And, you know, a lot of the athletes I coach, that would be a big ask of them. But I think there's definitely benefits, be it, you know, just even in terms of being able to do a structured workout by feel and say, okay, just, like, feel out these paces and don't worry about what your watch tells you. Try and interpret, you know, the signs that and signals that your body gives you, that, you know, your breathing rate, the way your legs feel, all that sort of stuff is important information that you can use, you know, to benefit your running.
Mm. Yeah, because in a sense, like, I feel sometimes the watch can get in your head, which can affect your workouts.
100%. And it's a tool that has tons of benefit for athletes. But I feel like a lot of runners these days, they probably don't know a time without those watches. Whereas, I mean, I'm so old now that I did a lot of training pre GPS watch era. And I think that really helped me to kind of be able to feel out the pace that I needed to be able to run. And certainly for the marathon, that's, like, really important. You can't be reacting to, you know, looking at your watch every 20 seconds and being like, oh, I'm a little bit off pace, I better speed up, or I'm a little bit ahead, I better slow down. It's like you have to be able to be in tune with your body. And so I feel like I benefited from that a lot through my career. But I mean, obviously, it's pretty individual, right? There's people that are super tuned in to just their watch, and they do really well. So,
do you tell any of your athletes, like, do you give them, like, a strategy for the watch, especially in the marathon, like, check every 5K, let's say, or, like, I don't know, like, don't look at the pace for a little while and see how you feel, work, especially when you're having a harder time, just to, like, reset and then you can kind of continue, you can kind of, you know, recover from, you know, I don't know, a hill or something, you know, like, whereas people look at the pace sometimes and they freak out.
And that's something we try and, like, I try and work with people in, like, longer training runs. And if they're doing, like, a marathon specific workout and just trying to get them to not check their watch as frequently as maybe they're used to and say, okay, only check it every, you know, 3K or 5K or something like that. And that's something that can be positive, because in, you know, then they come to the race, and certainly in the race, I tell people you're in a pack in a race, and it's hilarious. You'll hear everyone's watch going off their every 1K or whatever they have it set to. And you've got this, you know, for about 200 meters, people's watches dinging, and I'm like, turn auto lap off. If you're in an actual race, they've measured the course. You have to run the distance that they tell you the course is, and there's going to be, you know, distance markers along the way. Just, like, trust the, you signed up for this race, for, you know, for the reason that it's a certified course. So just trust the course. But people have a hard time with that. So it's something, yeah, you do have to work at it with people in training.
For sure. We'll get back to the training and coaching and stuff, but I want to go back to the pre-GPS era when you were running and kind of, like, find out what your childhood was like and were you active as a kid, and then when did running kind of really come into your life?
Yeah, I was, typical kid that grew up in the suburbs in Kingston and just played a lot of sports. I think my parents threw me in just about everything from, baseball to basketball to hockey. And running came in during elementary school and did like the cross country day at my elementary school. And then that kind of qualified me to go to the city championships and stuff like that. And, I did pretty well right away. And that was obviously something that motivated me, having a little bit of success. But I continued to play a bunch of sports throughout high school. And I think it wasn't until, grade 11 that I kind of ditched everything else and said, I want to focus on running. But it was a really positive part of growing up for me. I think it was, something where I learned a lot about myself and how to set goals and stuff like that. And I enjoyed the individual aspect of it as well. Not going to lie, I didn't do terribly well in team sports because I was super competitive and felt like teammates were maybe dragging me down sometimes. So it's the individual aspect of the running was something that really attracted me to it. And I said, I could say, okay, I'm going to set this goal for myself. And usually when I was younger, they were just to win races. I wasn't really focused on times at all, but I could set these goals and kind of chip away at them and could reap the rewards myself and only have myself to blame if they didn't go well.
Where did that competitive drive come from? Can you pinpoint something at a young age, or have you always been that way?
I don't know. I've always been that way. I think if you ask my parents, if you ask my mom, I was super stubborn from a young age. And it's funny, we see that now in our oldest daughter. My wife's like, oh, she's just like you. It's like, yeah, just like super driven and focused. And I don't know exactly where it comes from, but it's definitely been something that has been part of my makeup for a long time.
Was it always like fun for you, especially growing up running? And well, since you were competitive, I'm sure if you were winning, then it was fun. But when did it change from like more fun to more competitive for you? And maybe what were some like early struggles that you faced, if you can remember?
I joined a track club in the eighth grade, and it was a really great track club, not in existence anymore. But we kind of drew runners from all of Eastern Ontario, and there were some guys who were a couple years older than me that really kind of dragged me along in that setting. And eventually, I got to the point where they were, going away to the U.S. on scholarships and stuff like that. And that kind of became a focus of wanting to do that and feeling like I needed to achieve like certain times and stuff to do that. And so it was a really fun environment to be in, but also like at some point there, I was writing these times on my wall in my bedroom that I felt like I needed to achieve. And there was a little, pressure to do that. And I think I didn't always meet my own expectations, I think. And like a lot of, elite athletes that have made it to a high level, you're always putting the most pressure on yourself. The pressure is internal as opposed to external. So it's, it was always, kind of this externally, I was doing very well, but internally I felt like I could always do better.
Mm-hmm. Was there anybody who inspired you as a kid, like growing up? Like, was there any runners that you like looked up to, or was it just like the kids in your workout group?
Yeah, there was, at the time, like Kevin Sullivan was a huge name in Canadian distance running. And he was someone I really looked up to. I always envisioned myself being like a middle distance runner. I never thought I'd go to the marathon. So, Kevin being that mile and 1500 meter guy was, he was someone I really looked up to. Also though, Jeff Schiebler, all his records have been erased now by Cam Levins and now Mohamed, but he, you know, he had the 5,000 and 10,000 meter records in Canada for a long time. And he was kind of a cool story. He was, he ran for a corporate team in Japan, for much of his career. So he wasn't like a really a big name in the Canadian scene, but, he was someone that I really admired and thought, had a cool path and a cool story, in the running world.
Amazing. So did you ended up achieving that? Did you get a scholarship in the end? I know you went away to school.
I went on a scholarship to Providence College. It's a small private Catholic school in Providence, Rhode Island, and it's a Division I school. So yeah, I did that thing. So it was good. The hard work in high school with chasing some of the older guys around definitely paid off.
Amazing. Were your parents like always supportive of this, or you know, did they encourage you to do other things, or were they just like, oh, you love to run, so let's like let them go with that?
Supportive. It's funny. I actually had a conversation with my dad not too long ago about that, because I had an acquaintance who's got a daughter who's kind of in the high school, who asked me about that process of like getting a scholarship to the NCAA and stuff like that. And I was pretty independent through that whole thing. I think, you know, I told my parents that that's what I wanted to do, but I just kind of went about the process of it myself. And they were always super supportive of any of my, you know, athletic ambitions. My mom came to almost all my races, and you know, they're always there. But at the same time, there was no pressure from them. They did not care. Like I said, that you know, I pursued, you know, writing letters to, you had to write letters back then, send them in the mail. I wrote these letters to these universities in the States and kind of went through that whole process on my own without any pressure from them. I'm sure there was support. They probably bought the stamps for me, but I felt like it was a really good, you know, upbringing.
What did training look like for you at a young age? Like how do they train kids on track teams? Like, was it like a couple of times a week? Was it really intense? Or
we did, and I don't know if this was across the board, but we did a lot of intensity. Like we did workouts Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday mornings, and you know, most on the track, or if we were in cross country season, kind of on a cross country type course, and doing lots of intervals and hills and stuff like that. And I don't recall running a ton outside of those three practices. I remember when I came home after my first semester in university, and I definitely started running a lot more then. And I didn't have any running routes from my house. I was like, that were more than like 5K. So my longest runs when I was in, when high school were, you know, an easy run was no more than 5K. So it was definitely lots of intensity, and not a ton of volume, but it was, it seemed to work for me. I'm not sure that that's the best method to train people, but it was a really fun environment too. It's not like I went to these workouts and was like dreading them. I wanted to go to hang out with my friends and I saw the purpose of working hard and the workouts as well. But it wasn't like it was torture every time we were out there.
Did things change once you got in the NCAA, as far as, you know, competition must be maybe higher than what you were used to, and how did you hold up?
It was tough, really tough. Like the level of competition in the NCAA is, you know, for that age group of 18 to 22 or 23 year olds, I don't think there's any sort of setting that compares to the NCAA. And so it was tough for me. I always, you know, I did well in high school, won a few OFSA championships, which were like, everyone thought was the big deal. And I kind of envisioned myself being able to carry that over to the NCAA and be successful on a high level. But, you know, the training was a lot harder and it took me a few years to adapt. But I was fortunate to be on a good team where our focus was on cross country each year. And we had a great team environment to do that. So, you know, we were always competitive at NCAAs as a team. Individually, I probably never did as well as I wanted to, but I certainly learned a lot about, you know, about the sport and about the training that needed to go into it to kind of achieve a really, really high level. So it's not an easy place to be an athlete and to have success in NCAA Division I, but it's certainly somewhere where you, if you are able to succeed, then it's you know, set you up for a lot of success in the future.
It must be hard too, like being, you're still a kid, right? You're trying to get an education, you're trying to do good things at, you know, in your sport, and you're trying to like live your life as well, you know, like there's other things. I'm sure there's like partying and all kinds of stuff, you know? So was it hard to also find a balance between all those things, like, and being away from home?
It is. It's really hard because, like you say, you're just a young kid and figuring out how to navigate the world is tough. I think it was good. You know, I think back, and if I was just a student being thrown into that as opposed to a student athlete, it would be a lot harder. I was, you know, lucky to have that team and to have, you know, guys and girls and that were upperclassmen that had, you know, spent a few years on the team and knew the ins and outs of, you know, school as well, where, you know, take class with this professor, he's great, or, you know, those sort of things where you have some mentors that can kind of guide you through it. But at the same time, just being away from home, I remember my first week of my first year, I got poison ivy, and it was just like all over my body. And I was just like, we were living in these dorms with no air conditioning, and it was 100 degrees, and I'm just like oozing out of these poison ivy sores. And I'm like, what? I can't believe now that looking back that I just didn't like pack up and go home, because it was like a miserable start to my 4-year experience in university.
Did you start to see results with the new training that you're receiving, and when did you start to realize your potential for maybe something greater?
Yeah, I started to have success. Kind of, it was really incremental. I think all the way through, it's like indoor track was always kind of the indicator of where we were at and how we were progressing. And each year, I got better and better. The 3,000 meters indoors was kind of my big event. And, you know, I went from running 8:20 as a freshman to 8:10 in my sophomore year, and then down to 8 minutes in my junior year, and qualified for the NCAA indoor championships, which was great. I think I kind of bombed out and cratered under the pressure at NCAAs. I was second last, I think, but nonetheless, it was like, it was a sign of progress for me. And yeah, there was definitely more bad races than good throughout university, but I think there was enough kind of inklings of having the ability to you know, to be able to carry on and do the sport at a high level beyond university, that it was something that I really wanted to try and pursue, not really knowing what that would look like or how to navigate it, but, you know, having that in my mind as I was getting, you know, kind of into my last year or two of university, and knowing that even though I wasn't having all of the successes that I wanted, that there was definitely the possibility and the desire and the drive to keep going.
So yeah, it always seems like you were looking a little bit further ahead. So like with the scholarship and now like what happens after school and the fact that you still wanted to keep running in your life. So what did that process look like coming out of school and then still wanting to be in the running scene and stay competitive? Was it like, did you have to talk to a coach? Did you have to find a club close to home? Like, what did that all look like?
Yeah, it's not an easy process to navigate. I think people that, follow running, they see the success of the highest level athletes, you know, signing contracts with companies and joining these groups that have the support of big shoe companies and stuff. But that's, you know, that's not the reality for most people, and certainly wasn't the reality for me coming out of university. But I was fortunate to connect with Steve Boyd. Actually, throughout my university years, he lived just down the street from my dad in Kingston, and we connected when I would be home from university in over Christmas break sometimes, and he was just someone who I really looked up to as an athlete and as a coach. And when I actually finished university with really the only injury I got during university, but it was kind of bad timing. I wasn't able to run indoor or outdoor track in my last year. And I just decided to go back to Kingston, and Steve was there, and we kind of connected, and he started coaching me. But you know, he didn't have a club at the time. He was, I think, maybe Physicult, which is the group that he has now in Kingston, was maybe, you know, in its infancy. But certainly there was no athletes of my caliber that he was coaching. And I didn't really have a plan in life. I was just kind of floating around and coming off of an injury and looking for motivation. I actually ended up going to Australia for 5 or 6 months. My dad went there. He was a high school teacher, and he went there on a teacher exchange. And it's like you just basically like flip houses with another teacher from Australia, basically. So I went down there really just because I had nothing else to do after university. But I was lucky to connect with a club down there, a really big club. And there was just some runners that I connected with. And it was actually in the fall, summer and fall of 2015, heading into 2005, 10 years ago. This is a long time ago. So 2005, and that was heading into the 2006 Commonwealth Games, which were in Australia in March. So there was a lot of, good energy in that community. And Steve was still coaching me, but I started doing races down there, and I was having a lot of fun. And kind of at the end of my university time, when I wasn't competing anymore, I wasn't sure really what things would look like it was my first real injury. So I was like, oh, will I ever get back to the level I was at? And, I started running really well and setting PBs in these races in Australia. But it was like, there was no support really. I mean, I was living out of a backpack, out of my dad's house in Australia, and kind of just going around to these different races and exploring Australia at the same time. But it was really, it was just kind of really fortuitous time in my life. And it kind of re-sparked where I wanted to take my running. And I came back from Australia without really any plan again, but just, trying to navigate life and still keep the focus on running as much as I could. But eventually I decided to get a real job, which is not something that, usually runners try and, have a part-time job and balance that with their running. But I just decided that I would get a job. I had a friend in Providence where I'd gone to college who said, you know, there's a job here that you might like. And I took it. I was working full time and still running. And Steve was still coaching me. And I think it was difficult times in terms of, you know, I didn't have a lot of peers that were doing the same thing as me, grinding out 40 to 45 hour work weeks and trying to train at a high level. But at the same time, I was comfortable in that environment in Providence where I'd gone to college, and I still had a lot of friends there that were running at a high level, but just, you know, not doing it around a full-time job. So I still had a lot of good connections. And I think that helped me to kind of stay in the sport. There's a lot of people that were motivated at that time and, you know, in Providence that were doing good things at a high level. And that was good for me.
It's I couldn't agree with you more when you said like your peers, some of your peers weren't doing the same thing as you. And I find that's like, I have two sets of friends now. It's like, I got my running friends and I got my like high school buddies, which they don't do the running stuff. So it's like, you know, it's very, very different, you know, like we'll go golfing and do other things, but, they're not runners. So and they excelled in like soccer and other things when they were young and hockey, but I found it was it's funny when you said that, and it must be hard to come out of school and like not really know and to want to be competitive. Do you remember what like Australia seemed to be a positive adaptation for you? Do you remember what a breakthrough was for you? Where I mean, because you went to the Olympics, at world champs, and stuff like that. Like, when did that seep into your mind as a possibility? And like, where you maybe started to believe in the ability. Was it you? Was it Steve? Like, you seem pretty driven. With limited support. So.
Yeah, I think the drive was always there, and then, you know, definitely a few tough years. Like after the initial kind of starting to run PBs again in Australia, I just kind of struggled for a few years to find my way on the track. I was still trying to run 1500 and 5000 on the track, and I just wasn't doing well. But Steve was always, you know, he could always see in my training and was always reiterating to me that I was making gains, and that there was a breakthrough sort of looming. But it wasn't really till I switched to running mostly on the roads, and that was kind of a fortuitous thing of being in Providence and being in the New England area, was that they have such a rich tradition of road racing that goes back to kind of the running boom of the, you know, of the 70s, when all these road races popped up, and you could, you know, from Providence, I could drive an hour and find, you know, a pretty competitive road race easily every weekend if I wanted to. And I more or less started to do that. And it was a lot of these races had been won by, you know, really good runners in the past. And I remember one race that was kind of a big fixture on the New England road racing scene was the record was set by Charlie Spedding, who came third in the LA Olympic marathon. And so I broke that record on that course. And that was a moment for me where I was like, this guy who came third in the Olympics, and I've run faster than him on this course. And so there was, that was one that stuck out to me. It was like, you know, I'm making progress and I'm pretty good at this road racing thing. Just being in that scene in New England kind of opened up some doors. Like the New York Roadrunners were really good to me. They invited me to some of their events, and I ended up running for the BAA, the Boston Athletic Association, for a couple of years while I was down there. So it was just like I was driven enough and had these kind of little inklings of things happening that once I stepped up to the half marathon and then the marathon, things just kind of started coming together.
Was it a natural progression? Because you went from like a 3000 runner in college to then like running half marathons later. Like, What did that progression look like? Was it more abrupt, or was it a smooth transition?
It was pretty abrupt, and I think
and why, you know, like why did you like did you have an engine for that, or did you realize you had an engine for it?
Yeah, I think I realized that, you know, the longer the race went, the better I did. And even in the training, I was always, you know, better at tempo runs than I was at, like, you know, 200 meter intervals and stuff like that. So I think I don't know if I was more wired that way or what. And I would always get out kicked on the track. So I kind of maybe had this like little chip on my shoulder that I wasn't, you know, good enough at the shorter distances. But it was basically like I got invited to run the New York City half that back in the day, 2007, it was actually held in August. Now it's an event that takes place in March.
Right.
Yeah. But so for the first few years, that was an event that was, Dave Monty, the, former elite coordinator for the New York Roadrunners. He set that up to kind of prepare people for the fall marathon season, to have a half marathon kind of late in the summer. But yeah, they invited me to do that. And my first half, I ran 104.10, I think. And it was just,
Jesus.
It was really cool to be rubbing shoulders with, you know, all these elites. I think Meb was in that race. There was a bunch of other, you know, top level guys. And that was kind of the first time that I'd been in like a pro field. And I mean, I ran 104, which I was really happy with, but I think I was way, you know, I placed probably 15th or something like that. So it was a different environment from the track, and it was something that was really cool. And basically once I ran 104, I told Steve, I'm like, I want to try and run a marathon. And I think he thought it was a bit soon, but you know, he's always a straight shooter. So he would have told me if he didn't think that I could do it well. And we kind of set our sights on, you know, 6 months later in the spring of 2008, trying to run my first marathon.
And what was that experience like? The first marathon?
Yeah, it was, you know what? It was really interesting. It was pretty positive. You know, like everything else I'd kind of taken on, I set, you know, high expectations for myself. It was the 2008 Olympic year, and there was kind of like this rising, you know, it's always hard to qualify for the Canadian team. There's always extra layers of qualifying, you know, setting higher standards and stuff like that. But they had a rising star standard of 2:14 for men, that if you were, you know, younger, I think it was like younger than a certain age and hadn't been on an Olympic team before, that if you hit this 2:14, you'd be considered for the team. So that was my big goal. And I think training kind of, you know, pointed towards me being able to do it. And I even remember leading up to that race talking to Steve, and I was like, Steve, what's the fastest a Canadian has ever run their debut marathon? So I was, you know, I was always kind of thinking big. And the race itself, I ended up running 2:15:26, I think was my exact time. So came up a little short of that big goal of running 2:14 to be considered for the Olympic team, but still like a really positive experience and something that set me up. I think from there, I got some, in the following year, I got some support from Athletics Canada. Like I got karting and stuff like that. So it was a good step forward for me. I mean, to do my first one, I didn't have any, like, you know, elites usually get bottles on the course every 5K. And, you know, I didn't have any of that. I think I took like two sips of water throughout the race. So there's definitely like rookie mistakes that I was making. But, you know, I think I made it about 30K at 2:12 marathon pace in my first go. And that was like, yeah, that was something that kept me motivated, that I could like really, really do well.
Yeah. So what are some of those like main takeaways from marathon running that you can share that you try and like implement like maybe later on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just a different experience from racing any other distance, even, you know, even at the elite level, it's like the half marathon is not something that compares to the marathon. There's just so much more that goes into the marathon than any other event. And I think it's just unpacking all of that stuff. It's like, there's so much you can bring to your training in terms of, oh, you know, maybe my long run should have been longer, or maybe I should have done more marathon pace work. And then there's, you know, the aspect of nutrition and all that stuff and how you taper for the race. And then, you know, like traveling 8 time zones and when you need to be there. And there's just like so much to unpack. And I really liked all of that stuff. And I think I've kind of, you know, been able to throughout my own career as an athlete, like really been able to hone in on some of those things. But then also, for people that I coach now, it's easy for me to help them kind of tackle some of those elements of the marathon that would be, you know, really foreign to them.
Mm. What would you say is your greatest accomplishment as a runner? Like you've done a few things, you've won a few like major events, and you know 10K champ was pretty cool last year, right? So I think you said it had been a while since you had your title next to something. So you know what, like obviously the Olympics are pretty huge too, and like, was that always a dream for you? And like, you know, what was that experience like too?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Olympics has to be the one thing that kind of stands out as my biggest accomplishment. I think, you know, first step qualifying for the Olympics was the big accomplishment. And then also like just being able to perform, in the Olympics on the day was something that I was really proud of. You know, I ended up 20th, and you know, it's so hard to know in the Olympics. It's like if you're not meddling, what is a good accomplishment? But it was something that I was happy. I felt I, you know, performed at a really high level, and in my first time, you know, my only time at that stage. And I think, you know, that's something that I'm definitely proud of, definitely an experience that, you know, I'll never forget. There's the crowds, the fans, along the course, and just everything about it was pretty incredible. So that's gotta be the highlight.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to ask you what's the vibe like, around all those, like you're around the best marathoners in the world, right? Like it's gotta be like, what are you like starstruck almost? Like, cause you know, it's going to be hard to medal, you know, if you do, like something's going to happen. Right. But
yeah,
what's that whole vibe like?
Yeah. It's kind of funny before the Olympic marathon, it's there, you know, there, it's obviously very high security. So there's, everyone's in kind of a warm-up area. Every country's got their own kind of tent, and their own physio, and coaches are kind of there. But it's not like, I wouldn't have described it as super tense. There are some people who are, you know, having fun, and people that know each other from different countries are having some banter. But there's definitely some people who are, you know, you can tell they're super focused, and this is, you know, the pinnacle of their 4 years or of their entire career. Right. So I think I was nervous, but I didn't really think about, like, I didn't, you know, see other athletes and say, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, on the start line with, mm-hmm. with this guy or that guy. It was just more like, I went in with a plan, and I just was kind of focused on the day, on like, you know, executing that plan and but at the same time trying to like recognize that this is a, you know, once in a lifetime experience
for sure. And so, you know, after that kind of experience, you know, I've experienced it in big events. I've done triathlon and I've done Ironman before, so that was like maybe, or running Boston, and you kind of go through this, like, I've gone through this, like, depression almost, where it's like, you come off such a high, like, where do you possibly go from the Olympics?
Yeah. Huge letdown for me afterwards. Definitely, like, you know, the post-marathon blues is a thing. And I think, you know, for me, that was such a, you know, razor sharp focus on that event, on that day for me, for, you know, many, many years leading up to it, that once it was done, it was like, oh man, this is like, what do I do now? I remember, so the men's marathon's on final day, and I didn't really do a lot of, you know, kind of going to other events and stuff like that. And I remember the day after waking up, and I just went to the gift shop in the village to pick up some things for my family, and there was like nothing left in the, like, there was no memorabilia left to buy. And I was like, this is really, and then we had to be out of the village by like noon. the day after. It was like, this is all coming to a close really, really, really quickly. It's all over.
They're like, get out of here.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, get out of here. See you later. And so to boot, I actually ended up with a stress fracture in my pelvis in the race, in the Olympic marathon, and kind of dealt with the repercussions of that for months. It took months and months to diagnose afterwards. And so I was, you know, hobbling around in pain, running for a few months before I was diagnosed. And then I was, you know, not running, until kind of, you know, early in 2013. So that made it even harder for me. It was just kind of like, the letdown of the you know, post Olympics was, hit me pretty hard.
For sure. And how did you deal with that injury? And like, that's probably the worst injury you maybe had in your career, but I could be wrong about that. And like, how do you deal with the injury? And like, you know, obviously, like, you're limited in your ability from what you're used to doing coming off the Olympics, all this stuff. So what does that do to you, like, mentally?
Yeah, it was really hard mentally, because I had had such good momentum for, you know, probably the 5 or 6 years, you know, probably from 2008, when I ran my first marathon to that point, you know, really good momentum with only kind of a few hiccups along the way. And I, you know, in my mind, that was just like the start of, you know, a really good career as a high level, you know, international marathoner. But, so, you know, my plans were to, you know, continue to improve and get better and better. And I wanted to do it immediately. You know, there was no like, oh, take a year to like regroup and rebuild. That was not in, you know, in my plans and in my mindset. So it was really difficult for me to deal with the injuries. I wasn't, and I did say injuries, because then it was kind of, it led to a spiral effect of just more and more injuries, kind of trying to rush back to training. And I was, you know, still really focused, and I would cross train like a madman and still stay really aerobically fit, but kind of structurally, it's like the engine is really good, but the chassis is broken, and just never addressed kind of the issues with structurally with my body, and just kind of ended up going through like a cycle of injuries. And you know, kind of talented enough that I could come back quickly from an injury and do some decent races and get some decent results. But after a while, I think the mental side of things is just with the injuries is just a knock to confidence and, you know, my belief in myself and my abilities. I would just, you know, not believing in myself enough and making silly decisions in training to kind of push the envelope a bit too much too soon to, you know, trying to prove to myself that I was, you know, still the athlete that I was prior to being injured, or that I thought I should be, and just making mistakes that like that. And it just kind of spirals. And, So yeah, it's the injuries are tough. Definitely learned a lot about, you know, that I can apply now for, you know, for myself to a certain degree, but mostly to people I coach about the importance of being patient, you know, and dealing with the process of an injury and realizing that injuries, you know, there's a reason behind them. There's a root cause to them, and it's important to kind of address that.
Yeah, isn't it hard mentally? Well, obviously, I'm not like at your level, but like whatever level you're at, you can say like when you've had those positive races, or like even last weekend, I went out and did a half marathon virtual thing, and you know, in my mind, I was like, I was in shape from like last November from New York Marathon, and I was like, oh, I want to run like this time, you know. But fact is, like, I haven't trained like I was training for the New York Marathon this year. So mentally you're like, you want to be in a place that you were, but then you can't get there because you're going through an injury, or you haven't trained as what you're used to. Like that to me, I found like really tough, you know, because you can say it, but the body can't perform at that level. Did you ever get back to that level, do you felt?
Yeah, I mean, I had glimpses of being back at that level for short periods of time, but never consistently enough that I ran another good marathon. I've only finished one marathon since that 2012 Olympic marathon. But yeah, I mean, it just, like, to your point, the body and the mind like have to be working together, and one can't be you know, in a different place thinking that it's ahead of where the other is, or in order for things to go well. And the tough part is that I think for a lot of people, when things are going well and you're making improvements, that these things are just naturally working together, and you don't realize that everything is working together in synergy. And, you know, when it's disrupted by an injury or a long break of training for whatever reason, you're struggling to find that way to make it work again is something that I think a lot of people can, you know, relate to, as you have recently.
Mm. So it also, you know, running is a big part of your identity as well, right? So how did you, in a sense, like reinvent yourself within the space? Like, it's not the only thing that makes you who you are, but it's a big part of who you are too. So how do you like turn that, maybe, you know, into a positive thing? And I know you started Mile to Marathon in 2013, shortly after the Olympics. So was that kind of like, did that come off of the, you know, the injury and maybe trying to do something a little bit different, but also within running?
For sure. Yeah. It's really hard when your, you know, identity is wrapped up in being this runner and, you know, performing at a high level and your race results being what kind of defines you. And I think, yeah, the coaching and Mile to Marathon was something that for me, I really saw, kind of throughout my buildup to the Olympics, that it was like, it was really hard. I spent a lot of time training on my own, training camps in Flagstaff or San Moritz, beautiful places. Like, what a privilege to be able to do this stuff. But at the same time, it was a pretty lonely existence. And it was kind of after the Olympics that I was kind of opened the door to the running community at large, and, you know, started doing some speaking at different events, whether it was road races or to different clubs and stuff like that. And I just really enjoyed that. And I felt like I didn't realize I had this kind of wealth of knowledge and experience that people were interested in. It's just like, I always just thought, it was okay, I need to, you know, who I am is, you know, my result on the page at the end of a marathon. And there's realizing there's more to it, and that coaching could be, you know, a space where I could like contribute, share my passion and share my experience was you know, a step for me that was really important.
Mm. And I think that's great that you found that as well. You know, like it's, like I said, it's, I was listening to a podcast, Ritual podcast, and it was like a speed skater. And they were talking about that exact same thing, how like you go from like this pinnacle in your career and then it's all leading up to that and then it's done. And then you're never heard of again, you know, it's like, yeah. Unless you 100%. Won the, unless you won the thing, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, it, you know, that kind of getting to that pinnacle is definitely, I wouldn't say anyone at that level would say they had really good balance, you know, in life. And, there was the focus kind of has to be on that one thing, but, certainly for me, coaching was, you know, and starting Mile to Marathon was something that brought a little bit of balance to things and a little bit of perspective for me that was, you know, really positive.
So, you know, coaching from, you know, elite athletes doesn't always translate, right? But why was it different in your case? And I know you're working with somebody else, like you're a co-founder of it. So what do you bring to Mile to Marathon, and, you know, what is it all about?
Yeah, I think, you know, I co-founded with Mike Woods, who's now a professional cyclist. But at the time, he was, you know, he was an injured runner. And he had started a little group of runners, and I just saw the way that he interacted with the athletes that he was coaching, and just, you know, his ability to share his passion for the sport, that could be translated to athletes, you know, at any level, was something that was really kind of a spark for me. And so, you know, with Mile to Marathon, that's kind of what we want to do, is like, you know, we have these, you know, experiences as elite athletes, but we want to be able to share everything with athletes at all levels, and to be able to show them that it's not just about, you know, running fast. It's not just the fastest person on, you know, at the end of the race that matters. It's that everyone can have their own individual goals and dreams and work towards them and be able to, you know, improve. And it, you know, it's evolved over the years where, you know, once I was in Vancouver, and doing a Mile to Marathon there, a lot of the focus was on the group and the group dynamics, and Rob Watson, who's the head coach there now, you know, was really instrumental in that, and kind of showing that, you know, like, let's get people together to train together. And there's a lot of positive energy from that. So that's a big part of what we do in non, you know, pandemic times. It's a bit tougher right now, obviously, but yeah, so we're really just, you know, trying to create space for people to, you know, to pursue their goals and running no matter where they're at. And, you know, we feel that we're doing a pretty good job right now.
Yeah. I mean, I see like all the posts and stuff, and you see the singlets, and it's definitely, you see it on social media. And I know Kelsey Hunter, who's also been on the podcast. She runs with you guys, and she seems to love it. So it involves like some group workouts during the week, but is it also like some personalized training plans as well?
Yeah, for sure. So we, you know, we coach people in person in Vancouver and in Ottawa and now in Calgary. And those are fun group workouts a couple times a week, but it's also personal coaching, you know, kind of online or remotely for people anywhere and everywhere. And, you know, that's a big part of what we do too. And there's, you know, I think we have 16 or 17 coaches now that are coaching people. It's mostly in Canada and the US, but there's people that we coach remotely everywhere. So it's, yeah, it's been a really fun way to reach the community at large. And it's grown quicker than I would have expected it to. And I only got into it, you know, with the desire to coach and help people with their goals. And, you know, there's a lot of it now that is, you know, it's a business, and I'm trying to, you know, learning a lot as I go about running a business that I never, you know, anticipated doing. And it definitely is tough, but at the same time, it's like being able to empower people, you know, and help them with their goals is really what we try to remain true to, and what excites me about it.
That's great. What are some of the most commonly asked questions amongst your athletes?
Oh, I mean, it's everything from like the most basic thing is people are obsessed with drinking water on their runs or some sort of fluid. I had this conversation with someone the other day, and it's like, yeah, I get that one all the time. How much do I need to drink while I'm running? And I mean, it's funny, but I think in general, people are just like, I find that runners get to, you know, a certain point where they crave the structure of things, and they want to take the steps to improve. So it's, you know, writing people specific training towards a goal and having, you know, specific workouts in there is something that people really hang on to, and they want to know, you know, the purpose. What do I have to do on this long run to run a better marathon and stuff like that. So it really depends on someone's goal, what the, you know, where they're seeking the most knowledge from us. But it's you know, it's a fun process to engage in people with.
What do you think is the greatest the thing that, like, to unlock your potential in a marathon, let's say, what do you think is the recipe for that?
People need to run more, really. And to run more, people usually need to run slower. And so it's like, when I talk to people about this, it's usually counterintuitive to their thinking. And then, you know, people think that running needs to be, it's a difficult sport, so that it needs to be hard all the time. So the concept of like an easy recovery run is something that people really, really struggle to grab onto. And, you know, getting it across that, you know, if you do these easy runs at an appropriate pace, it's going to allow you to run more. And ultimately, you know, the marathon's a really long way. So to, you know, it's, we're not talking ultra stuff. It's, you know, obviously really, really long, but it's, you know, you need to be running more. So people, and I'm not talking about everyone needing to run 120 miles a week, but it, you know, it's really hard to, for people to unlock their potential when they're only running 40 or 50K a week. But, you know, a lot of people are doing that, and they're doing that at race pace or faster. And so it's, you kind of have to flip the switch for people to realize that more running slower, it's not sexy, but it's a big part of the equation that people often miss.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even just this week, like, I've taken a job since the pandemic up north, so I find it tough to get the training up there. By up north, I mean like Nunavut, so it's like way up north. And I have, you know, limited access to roads and if any, and it's mostly treadmill. But when I'm home, that's when I try and get some volume in. But like, just commuting, I find, is like a nice way to get mileage in, and or go meet a friend somewhere and then run with them and then run home, and then you're, you know, you got a 20K day kind of thing. And
yeah,
you know, it's chill and relaxed, and I'm not too worried about how long it's taking me. It's just like, just good conversations and that kind of thing. What's
100%.
What's your favorite workout?
You know, I think a long tempo run, it was always my, you know, bread and butter as an athlete. And I think for a lot of people that we coach with mile to marathon, it's like the, you know, a long run with some marathon pace work in it. It's like the getting the stimulus of running marathon pace on tired legs is something that is an important thing for people to be doing. So that's something that we really hone in on. But yeah, I mean, back in the day, I could hammer out a, you know, 10 to 15 mile tempo run, and that was me in my zone.
That's heavy. Is it normally, so if you're training for a marathon, are you running that at like faster than marathon pace, or is it marathon pace, or what do you?
Yeah, usually you know, building up from 10 miles to 16 or even 18 miles at marathon pace is kind of what it would look like throughout a build for me. And you know, those were the hardest workouts on the calendar, but often certainly the ones where I gained the most confidence.
Right. Yeah, because it's a thing that represents your race the most, probably. So the more you can do those kind of race type simulations, the better you're gonna feel, like mentally about it and all that.
Exactly.
If you're getting questions about water, you must be getting questions about nutrition too. Like, so what are some of the nutrition questions that you get, and maybe some tips you can give with regards to that?
Yeah, most people they really want to know what they need to be taking in the race, and usually, like with most things, it comes down to training your body. It's not like, okay, just, you know, on race day, all of a sudden I tell you, you need to drink, you know, a certain amount of water and get in a certain number of carbs through gels or sports drink or whatever. It's something that you kind of have to practice in training. And I find that most people are way under fueled. And they think they're doing a good job of taking gels and fluids and stuff, but in the end, if you calculate it, they're not doing a good enough job. So usually we, you know, just kind of calculate it out and use a little spreadsheet to help people figure out how much they need to be taking. And there's so many in terms of what you take. There's so much out there in terms of the products, and you know, a new one will come along every couple of years and say, this is the secret, but really it's really individual. I'd always tell people to try a variety of gels and sports drinks and stuff, and try it in training, figure out what works for you, and then, and then work at kind of pushing up your limit to what you can take. And you know, usually that's very individual as well. And we'll put some benchmarks that people need to try and achieve in terms of how many carbs they're taking in, because you know you're gonna lose, you can only store so much glycogen, so you're gonna need to replace it in the marathon. And that's kind of it. I feel like it's pretty simple, but it's something that people often miss.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, again, with the triathlon and even the marathon running, like testing in training is crucial, because I mean, that could be the difference. That could take you out of a race, even if you haven't tried this gel or this, you know, you're trying something new, you pick something up on the course too. That's often, yeah. I mean, I picked up a stick of wax one time.
Oh, no way.
I wasn't aware. It was maybe one of my first half marathons, and I picked up a stick of wax and put that in. That went down smooth, let me tell you.
Delicious. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it's trial and error. I was lucky in, you know, in my biggest years in the sport, I was able to work with Trent Stellingworth, who's at the Canadian Sport Institute in Victoria, and he's kind of one of the leading exercise physiologists in a lot of the fueling stuff. And so that was a part of my training that I always, you know, it was a box I needed to check, just like double knotting my shoes before the race. And it's just something that I've kind of translated to, you know, we don't need to get into all of the science with every runner, but it's certainly something that needs to be addressed.
For sure. So how do you have time now for your work with the Tamarack Ottawa Marathon and your work with the elites, and congratulations on getting that position. I know it's been months now, but I'm sure it helps, like as an elite, to to coordinate the elites as well. So what does that entail for you? And what does that look like?
Yeah, having the time for it is interesting. I remember when it first came up, and you know, I have this conversation with my wife, and we're constantly, you know, juggling things and making things work. But it's like I forget the exact analogy, but you can only put so much on your plate. So if you're gonna add something new to the plate, then something else has to come off. And I don't actually know what I took off the plate to add this to it, but it was something that for me was like being fairly new to Ottawa. I felt it was a really good way to connect with the Ottawa community, and just having been an elite for so long and being on one side of that kind of conversation of, you know, showing up to a race, expecting that there's going to be a hotel room ready for me and someone to take me to the start line of the race, and that the race is going to go off smooth. There's this whole other operation on the other side of things. And that really intrigued me. And I had a good relationship from having been an athlete, having competed in the 10K at Ottawa Race Weekend for a number of years with Manny, who was the elite coordinator before me, and with John Halverson, who was the previous race director. So it just kind of came about naturally. And, unfortunately the race didn't happen. The real in-person race didn't happen this year, but I think it's something I'm really excited about. And it's like working with Ian Fraser, the new race director, and he's excited about the event. It's been such the event has had such great tradition. And I feel like, yeah, having had the experience of being an elite athlete is important, but I'm learning a ton. And, kind of in the lead up to the race, when we still thought it was going to happen, I was learning lots, working with the race organization itself, and kind of the nuts and bolts of how you make an event like this happen. But also working with the agents of all the elite athletes was I had had an agent myself for a number of years throughout my career, but to be working with them in this capacity was really interesting and learning a lot. So it's fun to be involved, and something that looking forward to in the coming years.
For sure, yeah. And yeah, it's gonna be fun, to work with some of the new elites, and what's it like, that's gotta be exciting too, to see like the new faces and the new athletes and the top some guys probably going after your times too. And I'm sure that's it's a pretty good, like, I feel like the spirit in Canada especially is good that way as well. So
it's a great community of athletes, it seems, the elites right now. And it's a lot of people younger than me that I don't really know that well, but I see the results, and it'll be fun to kind of try and get a bunch of them together once we're back to real races, and see what we can do to assemble some really great fields and kind of showcase the event.
Yeah, it's a great event, and it's actually one of the ones I've enjoyed year after year since I've started running in about 2010. So
cool.
Yeah, I love race weekend in Ottawa, and the half marathon is like a fun place to be. And I've done the marathon once, but only pacing somebody, so I got to see it. But yeah, hopefully get to push there again sometime soon. What's the so like you lived in BC, you lived in Ottawa. Like, how are those communities different, and how have you like adapted to a new place in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver was home for almost 8 years. I had some stints where I was training at high altitude and in Flagstaff in there, but more or less called BC and Vancouver home for 8 years. And I loved it as an elite athlete for the wonderful climate. So Ottawa is, winter is tough, but the community there is pretty awesome. It's really, like, people are just active, and the winter they just truck on. It's like a lot of people are, I would say people in Ottawa are more willing to kind of adapt. I guess you have to be. So, you know, if there's a big snowstorm and running is like really hard, people just like go for a cross country ski, for, you know, 3 hours instead of their long run. And they'll be totally cool with that. Whereas in Vancouver, it's like you never deal with those kind of like having to change plans or those interruptions. So if, you know, someone missed their long run for some reason, they'd be like up in arms. It's just, yeah. You know, and, yeah, but at this, it's been fun to get involved in the community. But like the weather is the biggest thing that makes the difference.
What's some of your favorite places to run in both places?
Yeah, in Vancouver, I lived very near to Pacific Spirit Park. So it's like a big forest with really well-maintained trails. And I would just do almost all my easy runs in there. And that was that was glorious. I still miss that a lot. But Ottawa is a great city. There's tons of paved paths for pedestrians and cyclists that are great. So, you know, not having to deal with car traffic or anything, you could run, you know, on these paths for miles and miles and miles without any interruption. And I love that, you know, they've got the canal and the river. And I mean, at this stage of the game, I run pretty much the same route almost every day when I'm getting out the door, but there's so much you could do. And getting over to Gatineau Park is untouched territory for me. We just started doing some trail running stuff with Mile to Marathon, so I went for my first real trail run last week. So maybe I'll start doing more of that.
It brings you back to those cross country days, I guess.
Totally. It's it's fun. It's definitely out of my element, but really different, but also just like getting back to the roots of it.
That just brings up a question that I might have, like that I have about like switching up, you know, places to run and terrain. And would you recommend that in a marathon plan to keep things interesting?
100%. I mean, I think you need, you know, certainly you need to be, as I said before, you need to be running a lot. So, but you need to keep it interesting. You need that variety. So usually like easy days, I always recommend people like mix it up, and you only need the specificity of kind of, you know, if you're going to run a road marathon, sure, you probably need to be doing the majority of your long runs on the road to kind of develop that callusing in the legs to the pounding. But for the most part, it's like you can, variety is a good thing, and it's going to help you like stay consistent and injury free and help with recovery and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. What has running taught you over the years?
Oh geez, I mean, it's so many, you know, life lessons. And I think just in terms of you know, setting goals and working towards them, and you know, being able to overcome obstacles along the way, and it's helped in that aspect of life. And also just like it's given me so much. I've had the privilege of being able to be involved in the community as an elite athlete and coach and everything, and form so many great friendships. You know, I met my wife through running, and it's just a sport that, and I'm sure other sports are the same, but something where, you know, you learn a lot about who you are and create friendships that are, you know, last a lifetime. And it's just wonderful in that aspect.
What does it mean to you?
Oh, I mean, yeah, running is kind of, you know, what's defined me for a long time and, you know, helped me be who I am. So I think it's just a fabric, you know, it's part of the fabric of who I am. And obviously, I have a family now, and, it's fun to be able to share my experiences in running with them. And I think it's something that will, you know, I think it's a beautiful sport because you can always do it. And it'll always be a part of you. You know, it's not like some team sports where you play at a high level for a long time and then there's, you stop and there's no opportunities to continue. It's like, it's something that is going to be part of my life for forever. And, everyone around me, sees that and yeah.
Do you think you have some future runners in your kids?
We'll see. It's funny because my wife and I joke about this often because she was, a competitive runner in university as well. And afterwards, so, very talented runner in her younger years. So our kids definitely have the genes for it, but we joke that they'll probably end up being like video gamers or something completely opposite. But it's funny because I think, when you've done sport, it's really difficult with, now being a parent with kids and not, my kids are only almost 4 and almost 6 and not projecting like your experiences and your desires and in life. I think of like the Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite, just like living out his high school dream. And I think having achieved a high level in sport, I can just have a good perspective for my kids and not try and put too much pressure on them to do any one thing in particular and know that there's no one path to success and, their happiness doesn't necessarily have to come through, being a high level athlete.
Right. So where can people find out more about all the things that you do in Mile to Marathon?
Yeah. I mean, Mile to Marathon is, we've got social media going for all of that. I'm not a social media guru. If you want to know about my kids, you can follow my social media, Dylan Wykes, and I'm usually posting videos of them doing ridiculous things. But Mile to Marathon is a good place to find out about coaching and what we're up to, as a group with that. And it's that's me.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you do in Boston when you get back there. I've got to race it a few times and it's quite an experience. Not at the front like you, but still it's a spectacle for sure. So looking forward to that. And I want to thank you so much today for coming on and sharing your story and teaching us a little bit something about training and marathon running and kind of your journey and where it's brought you to this point.
Hey man, I appreciate you having me on, Justin. Hopefully I didn't waffle too much and go off on too many tangents throughout the conversation. But it's fun to kind of relive some of the younger years for me. I don't do that often, so appreciate the time.
Great. Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by the WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. But seeing as we can't do that in person right now, let's try our best to stay connected through social media. How can you do that? Every Monday, we'll connect through a virtual run. You can go out there at any time of the day and run any distance you choose. When you get home, share your run with us on Instagram by tagging at WRGRuns. And we'll post it in our stories for everyone to see. It's a tough time for everyone, so hopefully this helps us stay motivated to get out there and keep moving. If you want to learn more, visit our website, imarunner.ca, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Hope to see you all soon. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi, and hosted by Justin Pugliese.